For Belly of the Beast Life Stories, I'm David Aul.
I put so much energy into trying to be liked, into trying to be loved, to try to build self-worth through accomplishments, through grades, whatever, to compensate for this one part of me. And here I am owning that one part of me. And the narrative is that that's just one part of me. But no, really, right now in this moment, that's the only fucking thing that I know to be true.
This podcast is about the time we all get knocked down in life and climb up a new person. Listen for free wherever you get your podcasts. Let me introduce you to Sam Malik. I met Sam in Ohio as this really smart marketing entrepreneur and a community organizer who had organized a TEDx in his hometown and who was showing up at the events that I was creating. But then we reconnected because he'd moved to Los Angeles. And he's been on a journey since then. And it was the story that he shared a while ago in Ohio through social media that I remember really being moved by. And in a way, even inspired this show. Because I see stories like this and I want to amplify them out into the world. I want people to be able to find them and take their healing power and their inspiration that people can get from them and just know that they're not alone. So I'm very honored that Sam is with us today. Sam Malik, welcome to Belly of the Beast Life Stories.
Thanks for having me, David. I'm excited to be here.
Take us to the belly.
The belly. Okay. I think the best place to start here would be 18-year-old Sam, having just graduated high school. Valedictorian. I was president of... I was a lot of accomplishments that I probably could have listed on my bio if I wanted to, but... When we talk about still figuring out what that bio looks like, I'm hesitant to do it because I'm not sure how many of those labels I still feel like I need assigned to me. So, you know, going back to 18-year-old Sam, having just graduated high school, I was president of National Honor Society. I had just started a TEDx conference. I had a full ride to college. I had a lot of, quite literally, like, it was a joke with my classmates and I. We had like a competition of how many titles we had under our email signatures, and mine was always like the gold standard for everybody.
Overachiever.
One could say. We'll get into that. There's a reason for that. There were a lot of things that I think people knew me for in high school when I graduated, and that for me, I knew myself for. If you were to ask me who I was in high school when I just graduated, I would say I'm a leader. I'm an entrepreneur, right? Because I had started my marketing company that last year of high school. I am smart. I'm intelligent. I'm creative. I'm all of these things that in society, I think, related personally to a lot of accomplishments that I had garnered at that point. And something that I was dealing with at that time was my sexuality. As I was getting ready to go to college, there were a lot of feelings in my head because I was going to a school that I wasn't in love with. My two schools that it came down to were, you know, a school in Ohio and a school in California. And ultimately, I chose the school in Ohio because I had a full ride and was supposed to be in a really small, tight-knit program. And the idea of being in a small, tight-knit program and having a full ride sounded even more sexy to me at a time when I was dealing with a lot of insecurity, a lot of confusion, and I really enjoyed having another accomplishment to be able to tell people about. And so I went to school, and I stuck it out for the whole year. I was there for a really specific business program that ended up not really being what I thought it would. And at the same time, I was also starting what's now Malik Media, which is my creative branding and marketing company. But back then was really just freelance Sam doing graphic design and web design work. So when I started to realize that I wasn't really happy, you know, with my schooling, and I also was in somewhat of a conservative part of Ohio as well, right during the time of the 2016 election, also during a time when I was finally kind of starting to feel comfortable and ready to come out. And then we had the results of the 2016 election, and those feelings kind of sent me into mental turmoil again. So an outlet for me during that time, not really being sure about my path of studies, and at the same time, not really feeling fully embraced, at a time when my choices were, I can go to a school in Ohio, or a school in LA, and be free to live my life openly and come out and not be judged, or I can go to Ohio, and I chose to go to a school in Ohio because of the full ride, thinking, okay, I'm still going to push myself to eventually do this. This was also during a time, David, and I think a lot of times straight heteronormative society forgets how quickly culturally we progressed in the past like 3 to 5 years in terms of being queer, being accepted as mainstream, right? Like, we were very much on the early onset of that at the time when I was like 17, 18. And so 18, going to college, we were just starting to see these influencers like Tyler Oakley, Troy Sivan, people that I watched and was really inspired by seeing their coming out stories. And so here I am on my own in college, struggling, but also seeing some of these stories and really getting inspired to finally share mine and to start to live my authentic truth. And then the 2016 election happens. And for me, it's almost like it pushed me right back into the closet. So an easy emotional outlet for me was, let's focus on the business. That's productive. So that's what I did. And it got to the point where, for me, it didn't really make sense to keep going to school anymore. I wasn't enjoying it. I almost transferred back to my hometown and was going to go to another school there, but then decided to withdraw from classes a week before and to fully take the leap into entrepreneurship.
Sam, if we could go back a little bit.
Yeah.
Where's your family in all this?
So how far back do we want to go?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, this is a point of this is a hard point to talk about, but I'll get into it. I grew up in a hybrid family, per se, because I'm half Indian. So I'm biracial, in other words. On one side, I had the pressures growing up of Indian culture and knowing what it was like to be seen as gay in Indian culture. I actually remember watching the movie Moonlight with my grandparents and a cousin of mine. And then after, one of my grandparents, who I just had like the best relationship with and love her to death, heard her say something like, oh, it was like a great movie, except for like the fact that these guys were gay. And so like on one side, I had like that kind of underlying pressure growing up my whole life. And then on the other, the Caucasian side of my family being really Catholic, there was a lot of subtle homophobia in my household growing up. And what I mean by that was there wasn't any of the like, oh, you know, fuck the gays, they're going to burn in hell. That wasn't the narrative. It wasn't that blatant. It was like laughing when Ellen DeGeneres got married to a woman, or laughing when a couple was seen, you know, a same-sex couple walking around holding hands. It was going to church and hearing that being gay was a sin. And, you know, on top of all of this, and, you know, this is why I say it's a hard topic for me to talk about, is because of how evolved, you know, my family is now. But growing up, you know, my older brother struggled really deeply with his own mental health issues. And I was often the punching bag. So I was getting called faggot left and right. And when I was the one guy cousin that didn't want to play football and I wanted to play dress up with the girl cousins, I was called a girl. So my family, you know, in that sense, when I was growing up, was not really a safe place for me, at least I felt.
What age do you remember that happening?
Right. Probably 6 or 7, you know, maybe 8. But honestly, I kind of remember it back, like as early as I possibly can. But I have a really distinct memory of being in an open field and like having all my guy uncles playing football and me being like, why am I here? I don't want to do this. And then getting called she by my older brother. And then in high school, wearing really colorful pants because one of my really good friends was like, oh, people dress hipster now. Like, you should wear these cool, colorful pants. And I'd always kind of been afraid because I'm like, oh, no, I don't want people to like see me as gay. But this guy was super straight. So I was like, oh, if he can do it, I can do it. And so I did, and I wore these like bomb ass red pants that everyone was complimenting, and people like started to really like me for my colored pants. And one day, my brother told me, it was like, yeah, my friends, you need to like stop dressing like that. Like, my friends have said that like it looks like you're dressing gay. And I just remember, like, you know, being a sophomore in high school when I was like super, super confused at that point and like really trying to come to terms and fight this whole like denial. Getting told that was like the worst thing that you could possibly be told.
Why?
Because at the time that meant to me that I was less than. And when you grow up hearing the things that I heard and being told in the church that being gay is less than, inferiority is the biggest fear. It's the worst kind of scary monster you could imagine. And so, which actually kind of brings us right back to Sam at graduation.
Real quick.
Yeah.
At what age did you start having thoughts that you might be gay?
You know, oh gosh, that's funny. I was thinking about this the other day. I remember at a really young age, maybe I was like 4 or 5, my brother had some friends over, and I just randomly told one of them, they were twin brothers, that they were cute. I have no idea to this day. I think the only thing that I remember from it was the adverse reaction. I don't remember why I even said it or what prompted me to say it. But yeah, that memory still sticks in my head. Being like, wait, what? Why did you just say that? And those little like vignette moments stick with you. And one of the biggest ones for me is when I was 17 years old and I was at a leadership conference for Key Club, which was a service organization I was really involved in. We were sitting in the general assembly and it was all quiet, and all of a sudden everyone started hearing murmurs. And it had just gotten announced like via people's CNN notice and stuff like that, that the Supreme Court had legalized gay marriage. And at the time I was still in the closet, which sucked because like, I wanted to celebrate that moment so bad, but I was afraid that I would out myself in doing it. Conveniently, there were a lot of gay people at that conference, so I could almost like project my happiness and be like, oh, I'm so happy for you. But it really hurt when I came home and I had heard my mom talking to another one of my friends and basically saying, yeah, I don't really agree with that. Like, the Bible doesn't, you know, recognize gay marriage or that's against the Bible. Mind you, when we talk about my journey, I'm 21 right now. That was when I was like late 17. You know, that wasn't that far off. So that's not to say that my parents are the same way now. And when you ask where were they in all of this, what I described to you previously is much more what it was like. It was really hard for me growing up. And I need to be really sensitive when I say this. But there are times when I almost think to myself, mentally, in terms of the turmoil and confusion that I went through in my head, it would have been easier if my parents were just blatantly homophobic, because I at least would have had the answer in my head of like, will they accept me or won't they? But the problem is, you know, when I did come out, they did, but
they
I didn't,
did what?
They did accept me. But leading up to that, I had no idea. And I wasn't hearing, I was hearing the exact opposite because of, you know, what they grew up being conditioned to hear as well through whatever, you know, whether it be media or religion.
Can you take us to that day when you came out to them?
Right.
Describe it.
Yeah. So I mentioned that I was in that Key Club organization. I was on my way to a conference in Cleveland, and I was getting ready to go, and I told my parents, hey guys, just letting you know, like, I'm heading out. And they were like, you're going where? What do you mean you're heading out? And I was like, I'm going to Cleveland for this conference. And they're like, what are you talking about? You didn't tell us you were going to Cleveland. And the reality is I had told them, but I think it was one of those moments where they were like typing on their computer in one ear, out the other. Like, we've all had those moments.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. But they like genuinely did not have any recollection. And I knew for a fact, like, I wouldn't just think I was taking off to Cleveland for a conference without telling them. And so they're like, no, you're absolutely not going. You just used, like, you are so disconnected from this family, which at the time I was, because as I described, I was really feeling unembraced, and having grown up with all that, you know, self-hatred that had come from what I was hearing, I didn't feel like my family was a safe place to go. And so I isolated myself in high school. I distracted myself with these things like the conference that I was going to. They were like, you're not going. So I said, fine. Then I left the room and I packed my bags and I left. I texted them maybe like 5 minutes into the drive just saying, hey, I did tell you guys I was going. I'm at this location. If you need me, you have my number. You know I'm safe. You can always call me or you can call the supervisor. Like 5 minutes later, I get a phone call from my mom just screaming at me. And she's like, why the hell are you always causing problems in this family? You are making your dad so angry. You are like, basically, you're always rocking the boat. You're always the one causing issues. You're always the one in disagreement. You don't care about this family. You treat us like we don't matter. And I hung up, and I knew in that moment, I knew the exact answer. And I knew if I had told her, she wouldn't have, like, if I had just said, it's because I'm gay, she wouldn't have understood. She would have been like, what? But what does that have to do with this? But the reality is it had everything to do with it for me. That was the culmination of me growing up in survival mode, walking on eggshells, wondering if I was going to get bullied or policed for every little behavior, and if I was going to be less than, you know? And what that resulted in was me pushing my family away at every opportunity that I had. And, you know, I also grew up, my brother.
So when did you come out?
Oh, so when I was, oh, right. I ended up pulling over and I thought to myself, I was like, I have to do this now. And I couldn't bring myself to like physically say it over the phone. And I knew that I couldn't. So I basically just like everything that I just said to you, just like regurgitated, mouth vomited it via text message, and then like turned off my phone and drove to Cleveland.
So reenact it for me.
Like what I said.
Like you're texting it right now.
You want me to like say it out loud?
Yeah.
Oh man. I was like, dear mom, I don't really know how else to put this, but the reason why I've been pushing you guys away for so long and why you feel disrespected and like I don't love or care about you guys is because I've felt the same way pretty much my entire life growing up because I'm gay. And then it kind of went into a whole slew of other anecdotal examples. But yeah, and then my mom didn't see the text message for like a day. So I just kind of sat like, wondering,
right,
what's gonna happen. And actually it was so like the anxiety was so bad for me that I was supposed to leave like that next Sunday morning. This was a Saturday, so I was supposed to leave, or it was a Friday that I went up, but I was supposed to leave Sunday morning, and the Sunday morning was just supposed to be a social thing. And I decided I was gonna leave Saturday night so that I could come back while everyone was asleep, so I didn't have to look anybody in the eye, because I felt so exposed and vulnerable, and I had no idea at that point like what their reaction was going to be.
Sam, I want to take a break. We'll be right back. Hey guys, it is working. I got an email the other day from a company that tracks podcasts, and they told me that this podcast is moving up on the listener charts. That is 100% because of you, because of your ratings and reviews at places like Apple Podcasts. If you haven't already, take a minute. Please help us get these stories out a little bit further. Visit Apple Podcasts or iTunes and do a search for Belly of the Beast Life Stories. Subscribe so you hear future episodes the moment they're released, and then give us a star rating and write a thoughtful review. Thank you so much. So we just heard a story from Sam Malik, and it's a story that I think a lot of people relate to, and it's feeling pushed away and less than in a lot of ways, specifically for being gay. And he just told us of his story of coming out to his family over a text message. And Sam, my question to you is that when you came out, it must have been a huge weight off of your shoulders, right? Like, you've done it.
You know, the funny thing is, I actually completely disagree. And I think that's the thing, David, that a lot of people, I think people experience it both ways in the community. But for me personally, and I know that there are some people that relate to this, when I came out, I had been spending so much, I put so much energy into hiding and masking who I was, and in doing that with achievements and with grades and leadership and a business, that people say when you come out, like, it's this huge weight off your shoulders. You start to be who you are and live your authentic truth, right? Like, that's what they say. But the reality for me was, all of these walls had suddenly broken down, and I was left sitting in the middle of it, feeling totally exposed, wondering, who the hell am I? Right? They say, oh, like, being gay is just one part of you. It doesn't define you. But for me, all I was thinking about was, I put so much energy into trying to be liked, into trying to be loved, into to try to build self-worth through accomplishments, through grades, whatever, to compensate for this one part of me. And here I am owning that one part of me. And the narrative is that that's just one part of me. But no, really, right now in this moment, that's the only fucking thing that I know to be true. And that really led me to kind of start questioning everything, David. Like, all of my motivations, career-wise, and when I talk about my list of accomplishments and 18-year-old Sam having just walked off the stage after graduation, I'm sitting here right now thinking, I wonder what led him to be such an overachiever, as you said, right? And I think that there are a lot of people in the queer community who share a really, really similar experience, where almost a bit of their struggle is written off as high achievement, when in reality, it becomes really hard to draw the line between what of that was actual passion and actual fulfillment versus a literal, and I mean literal for me, high off of people validating you and telling you that you were worthy because you were smart, or that you're going to be a really successful business person someday, or you're a really intelligent young man, you know?
So emotionally, you took a nosedive.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Emotionally, and that spiraled into a lot of other nosedives.
But what about the public? When you more publicly came out, right, was that like at the same time?
So that actually happened about 2 years later, and so I was at this dinner party, and this was right after I had decided that I was not going to continue with school. So literally right when I had gotten back, and I was talking to a family friend of ours who I really, really, it's a middle-aged woman who I just, like, always really vibed with, because she's got a young spirit. And she's got like this young spirit. And it's actually really funny because I always assumed that she knew that I was gay. Just because of the way that I dressed and the way that we kind of like vibed over our mutual femininity. And she even invited me because like I used to do a lot of photography when I first started my business. So she had an underwear and pajama line and she had me come over and like photograph her in it. And we felt totally comfortable. And I was like so clearly not interested. I just thought she knew I was gay. And we were having a discussion about how for me back in college where I was, I personally didn't really like going out to the bars because a lot of them were like just really kind of janky and trashy. And she goes, Sam, you know what someone like you needs? Someone who likes going out to restaurants or going and experiencing things. You need someone who's actually going to appreciate this stuff. A straight, handsome man like you needs a girlfriend.
Oh, man.
And David, like right next to me is my mom. And immediately I do like the thing I'm trained to do for, you know, 20 years when everyone asks me if I have a girlfriend is I just kind of laugh. Ah, I've been busy with other things right now. Right. Oh, I have a business that fills the gap.
Be good, Sam. Yeah. Be the good Sam.
Exactly.
Yeah, don't cause trouble.
Exactly. Don't rock the boat.
Yeah.
And so I tried to dodge and veer the conversation. That's what I was trained to do. But it didn't stop. It just kept going. Mm. And it was in that moment where I thought to myself, I'm like, is this, like, what is happening right now? And I was feeling even more like weird and exposed because my mom, who knew I was gay, was sitting right next to me. And so I felt like I was double monitoring.
Was there eye contact?
I was avoiding the shit out of it, that's for sure. But I was kind of hoping that my mom would jump in and try to detract the conversation or that somebody would come up and pull me out of it. Like I was literally looking for a life vest or whatever. And it got to the point where I literally like took a fake phone call and was like, I've got to get going. And I left. And at that point, I wasn't even like emotionally confused anymore. I wasn't sad. I was fed the fuck up. I was at a point where I was like, I cannot keep this up. I can't go to another fucking dinner party. I cannot go to another meeting I can't go to another family event and try and like have to go through this whole mental game of explaining why I don't have a girlfriend, right? And so that weekend happened to be Labor Day weekend as well, or Memorial Day, whatever. We had a Monday off. And that I knew that like this was the time. I needed to stop living this lie. And so I kind of spent the whole weekend just like kind of sitting on my own and drafting this coming out letter that I was gonna post publicly. And the reason it took me so long to write it. There's two reasons. Number one was, and this is still like a really big part of my personal mission to this day, is I want to be the Sam that I always needed growing up but never had. And I know that with my platform, being in all these leadership positions, having this business, being the young entrepreneur that I never really got to see, you know, the gay young entrepreneur, that I had a platform and I needed to do this in a way that was not apologetic and that other people who were going through exactly what I was going through could look at and say, well, look, Sam's been able to do all these things and he's gay. Like I can do it too. I'm no less than. And I needed that message to come across. Now, the second thing, the reason it took me so much time is I was writing this with every audience of mine in mind. I was writing it with my parents and my family in mind, the Catholic side of my family, the Indian side of my family. I was thinking about the Facebook friends that are, you know, three whatever removed, like who are going to be talking about it at family gatherings. I was thinking about my clients. Is my business going to fall apart if I have a homophobic client? And thinking to myself, am I willing to sacrifice and hide part of myself for that because my income is dependent upon it? And finally, I was like, this is not for them. And I had to go through and just flag apologies and get them out over and over again. And I had to remove every ounce of apologetic tone from this thing. And that took a lot of work. And finally, on that Monday, when my parents were off, they went to visit like some family that lived a couple hours away. And I literally like had an operation for this thing because I knew like this was the moment that I needed for myself and I was ready to own. And I was so ready for this. I had two laptops and my phone. And on my phone, I had an Instagram post loaded that was the same thing as the Facebook post that was on my one laptop. And then my other laptop then had an email with two Gmail inboxes drafted to my grandparents because I wanted to tell them before them hearing from the general public. And then a couple text messages drafted to my best friends. And like within a matter of 30 seconds, it was boom, 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 send, slam those laptops closed, put airplane mode on my phone. And I just went on a bike ride. And I was literally out there for like 4 hours. And I was listening to Troye Sivan, who was one of the first gay artists that I had ever heard, who made music I related to, and whose coming out video inspired me to come out to my parents 2 years prior. And in that 2 hours, David, or 3 hours that I was out there, I can't even recall it because the time went by so fast, but it was, mind you, my devices were like off of cellular connection. I was out of the real world, and I was living in this zen and weird like in between of uncertainty but also peace, and knowing that I have no idea what the hell I'm going to come back to when I turn my phone on when I'm done with this. But if nothing else, whether it's happiness or hate, I'm going to enjoy these 3 hours and sit with the fact that I made this decision for myself. It's not going to be reversed. And maybe, just maybe, if there is hate, somebody who really needed to hear this is gonna get to hear it. And to me, that makes the whole thing worth it.
Sam, can you read your post to us?
Yeah, I would actually love to do that. Give me one sec, I've gotta wrestle for it. So there's a picture of an image here, and it's from a Nike ad, and it's got a rainbow and a check mark, and it says hashtag be true. And I remember that this was something that I had seen like 2 years ago, and I couldn't find it anywhere online, but it was like on a Pride piece of apparel before I was out and I had ever even come to a Pride. But I loved it so much that I printed it off and I pinned it in my office and I pinned it on my wall at school. And I'll tell you a little bit more about it in this post. So I'm really not sure how to begin a post like this, so I'm just going to go for it. After 19 years of playing along with a societal notion of what is normal, and at many times being ashamed of who I am, I'm happy to say that I'm done bullshitting and pretending to be a person that I'm not. Today, May 28th, 2017, I'm proud to say that I'm gay. Over the past year and a half, it has dawned on me that I've lived so much of my life pretending to be someone I'm not in an effort to please other people. As a leader of multiple organizations, as well as a business owner, I constantly feared that people would view me in a different light for being my true self. I feared that my family, friends, and community would look at me differently. I feared that my peers would not respect me as much or that I'd lose clients. I tolerated bigotry and homophobia because I didn't want to ruffle feathers. I've probably drafted this post in my head hundreds of times before, but I've never brought myself to actually write a post and publish it, in part because of how difficult it can be to articulate so many thoughts and emotions, but also because I've never really been truly satisfied with or authentic in the tone of my message. Each time I've thought through this message in my head, I've had a different audience in mind. My family, my Catholic relatives, my Indian relatives, my colleagues, my clients, my teachers, my closest friends, or even my future children. Each time I've struggled to find words to tell them that I'm gay in a way that is authentic and unapologetic. Whenever I thought through what I would say to them in my head, it always had an apologetic tone, a subtle ask for acceptance or for permission to be myself so as to not offend anyone or make people upset. This type of act, this constant nervousness that you'll offend people or change the way that they perceive you, it is absolutely exhausting, especially after nearly two decades of upholding this existential facade. Hence the reason I'm writing this post. Today, I stop apologizing, I start being my true self, and I begin eroding the facade I've spent 20% or more of my life trying to uphold. The picture above, Be True, is from a Pride campaign run by Nike. When I first came out to my family about a year and a half ago, I printed that sign out because, yes, I love the design, but more importantly, I wanted to constantly remind myself to find courage and to strive towards being my true self, no matter how long it would take. Today, I'm taking a bigger step in that strive towards authenticity. I'm proud of the person I am, I'm proud of the person I'm becoming, and I'm proud to be gay.
Bravo.
Thank you.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
So you turn back on all your devices. What happened?
There was an outflowing of support. It was, you know, first seeing the text messages from like my best friends saying, like, I'll love you forever. Like, this changes absolutely nothing. Like, all the things that I needed to hear growing up, you know, all came in at once. And it was elation. The feeling, David, was like indescribable. It was a high. But I will say, and I think this is really important for anyone, especially who maybe hasn't come out yet, to know, is that you don't just come out once, right? Social media has made it nice in that you can hit a lot of people, right? But there are people who continue to make assumptions that you do have to come out to over again. And I had to do that. But also, as a byproduct of this, feeling like I had truly built such a facade, going out in public for me was actually really hard right after. Going to our gym or going to the Starbucks in the small community that I grew up in, like, I literally felt like this, oh shit, like the veil's been lifted. People know what's really going, like, and I was just projecting everything that was going on in my head into other people's heads of like, they think I've just lived a lie.
Where did you feel safe?
Dude, I don't even know looking back at it. I felt safe when I was alone. I felt safe when I was alone and like listening to music. And I felt safe when I was talking to like the less than a handful of either gay friends or a few, it's more than a handful of like really amazing, incredible, supportive friends who truly thought no differently of me. It was with those people that I felt comfort. And through, I will tell you, it took me a lot of time to find my queer group of friends. It took me about probably 6 months, because when I talk about this facade and feeling like I had no idea who I was, like, I truly felt like I was living in no man's land, because I had spent so much time trying to be perceived as straight that I did not feel gay enough to get involved in the community. And I felt too nervous. I almost felt like I ostracized myself and couldn't go to gay bars because I didn't feel like I related. I had never been, I'd pushed that away for so long that it took finally a friend wanting to go to a gay bar for her birthday party to me going and meeting one random person that ultimately led to a friend group that changed my life. And to this day, some of them have come, some of them have gone, some of them are still here, but I'll cherish and value them. And they will always have a huge place in my heart because they were the first people that helped me feel like I was truly loved and embraced for who I was, not despite who I was. And that was absolutely paramount for me. And I think that it's absolutely paramount for any queer person hearing the story, that you might feel different when you come out and you might feel grossly misunderstood. And you probably have felt that your whole life. That feeling doesn't instantly go away, and it's not going to necessarily be understood by your straight friends, but you're going to find a community of people. It's going to take a little bit of time. But when you find those people, they are going to make you feel at home, and it will be life-changing.
Was there ever this thought in your head that I have to stuff it back down again?
Yeah. And do you say that with regards to after coming out publicly or even before? After, absolutely. I've had a God, in fact, that was a whole thing for me was, yeah, I mean, David, that was really hard for me personally because I, again, growing up in a family of all boys, right, with my brothers, and just being surrounded by a lot of masculinity, I tried so hard to be seen as straight. And also because I was like called out for being gay when I was younger. So I hypercompensated. And as a result of that, when I came out, I actually had a lot of people come up to me and tell me, oh my God, I would have never known you were gay. And at first, the weird part, and this just speaks to like the misogyny in our society, even within the gay community, was I was super flattered by that, by being seen as more masculine. And in fact, when people would be like, oh, you're not like one of those homophobic, or I'm sorry, not like one of those flamboyant gays, I would like feel really validated by it. But as I've grown and like realized that, first of all, those flamboyant gays, quote unquote, and I hate that term because I think it's very derogatory, they've paved the way for all of us to be able to express ourselves, right? And I love so many of them dearly. For me, I personally didn't relate to it. Relate that much to my more feminine side. But I was so afraid to express it that I got caught in so many situations, either in the business world or whatever, where someone would say, oh, do you have a girlfriend? Or like even in meetings when people should not be saying things about women or men, whatever, you know, whatever team they're batting for, saying like, oh, isn't that chick really hot? Or, oh, like we went on this work trip and these women were, and you're just kind of sitting there thinking to yourself, and this was a legit mental challenge for me, was am I like not being true to myself right now by speaking up and saying, oh, I can't answer that question because I'm gay? Or would that just be so out of left field? So a lot of times I just kind of was like, what the fuck? Like I would do exactly what I did in the conversation with Candace. I would laugh and try to redirect. And, you know, that kind of thing happened on a regular basis. And there were times, this was the most disappointing thing, and this has happened even since. It happens today. There are still people who, because I'm very expressive, I love like some days dressing, you know, very colorfully, other days dressing in like sports streetwear. Like I wear what I feel like. And sometimes based on that, somebody will meet me and think that I'm straight. And like we're super vibing, like having an awesome conversation. And then like they'll drop some homophobic like slur or like say something homophobic, not realizing that I'm gay. And I'm just like, what? You know? So yeah, I mean, it still does happen. And it's a unique challenge, I think, that a lot of queer people have to struggle through because it plays with your identity a little bit. And there can be a guilt factor because you're sitting there asking yourself, am I being true to myself or am I like protecting myself? Or would it just be a waste of energy to even try to convince this person? Should I just move on? You know? So yeah, I mean, that has happened. And I've gotten to the point now where I'm like so comfortable in my sexuality that I can typically like make a joke or like not even dodge it, but be like, oh no, like I like guys or like, you know, she's cute, but not as hot as that guy over there, you know? But it takes some exercising of that muscle. And 18-year-old Sam sure as hell wouldn't have been able to say that. 18-year-old Sam would have been like curling up in a ball.
So how have you dealt with some of these challenges?
Right. That's a great question. I'll say the first thing for me, and this is probably the biggest thing, has been therapy. It's been really instrumental for me. And again, I want to be very vocal about that because I think there's a lot of stigma towards mental illness and getting help for mental health. And for me, I was at odds with my identity, and in many ways, I'm still fighting through that to this day. But the thing that prompted me to go to therapy, you asked earlier where my family fell in this entire situation. And what ultimately prompted me to go to therapy was resurfacing of family issues after I had moved out, because I was realizing after I was starting to become really comfortable in my identity and go out, my parents were really happy for me, and they were like trying to play an active role in my life, but I like subconsciously hated them. And I recognized it. I was like, we'll have conversations and I'll blow up when they said something that shouldn't have really provoked me that much. But it's, and I realized like they want to love me, but I'm like not willing, or like I'm almost not ready to accept it or recognize it after hearing the things that I did growing up that created this innate sense of inferiority and needing to earn self-worth, you know, that ultimately bred me becoming a workaholic. And, you know, through therapy, I've come to find that, you know, that resulted in me becoming obsessive about my diet and what's now an eating disorder that I'm still fighting through, and having an obsession with perfection in routines to achieve perfection, which has been diagnosed as obsessive compulsive personality disorder. So I'm even realizing through this whole process that there are things deep down that I'm having to dig into and excavate that aren't pretty. And this last Sunday, I spent 6 hours just sitting at LPQ journaling. And for me, that's been really therapeutic, because I have a tendency to get caught in this slew of thoughts, and it starts to feel kind of like thoughts and feelings, really. And it can feel like a black hole that I can't pull myself out of. And so for me personally, journaling has been instrumental, because it forces you to organize some of those thoughts and feelings and in effect get some clarity out of it. But I will say the therapy piece has been huge, and that it's allowing me to take a step back and ask myself all of these things that I've let myself, or that I've let define me for so long, which of them are authentic? Which of them do I really truly love? Which of them do I want to let go of? And same thing with the relationships in my life. Which of them do I feel like I'm ready to forgive and move on from and grow with? And which do I feel like I maybe need to let go and rid myself of some baggage, not only from people, but from other things mentally that I've been holding myself back from?
Sam, let's take a break. We'll come back with some closing thoughts. Hey guys, it's David All. When I'm not making this podcast, I'm working with organizations like the Better Business Bureau to harness the power of positive storytelling. My story design company, 1990, exclusively develops positive narratives and then brings it all to life through branding, web applications, websites, and all sorts of messaging materials. If you'd like to work with us to help transform your organization, visit our website at 1990.com. That's 1990, all spelled out, .com. We're back with Sam Malik. Sam, you know, if you could go back to that four-year-old little kid kind of running around, getting bullied, you know, what do you tell him?
I think I would, like, first hug him. Like, give him a huge, giant fucking hug before I said anything else. And I would tell that pudgy, that pudgy Sam, that you're perfect exactly how you are. And that things are going to work themselves out. You just have to trust the process and be true to you. And, you know, I guess I'm being really elevated for four-year-old Sam, but I would tell him, go play dress up. If someone calls you a girl, fucking do a little dance and own it, because there's nothing wrong with it if somebody calls you a girl, right? And what I would also say is people are gonna try to put you down and bring you down. That's the reality of it. But just remember that those people either don't understand what you're going through or are probably dealing with something themselves that, you know, is easier for them to throw at you than to deal with themselves. But keep playing dress up and remember that you're perfect exactly the way that you are.
Sam, what are some resources and materials that have helped inspire you in your journey?
So the first that I would recommend is a book that I really feel like any any gay man should read this. It's called The Velvet Rage, Overcoming the Pains of Growing Up Gay in a Straight Man's World. That was the book that really forced me to take an inventory of what was fulfilling me in my life and what I was doing to compensate for really, really deep shame and innate self-hatred. And what comes out of it is a really positive message with a ton of truly practical tips that you can implement into your life. And I say wholeheartedly, if I hadn't read that book, we probably wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation right now. That's what led me to start going to therapy, which I would say is absolutely the second resource that's been most instrumental to me. Finding somebody to confide in is absolutely huge. And if therapy isn't an option for you, find a place, whether it be a local LGBT center. I know Columbus has like the Kaleidoscope Youth Center, which is absolutely fantastic. LA has the LA LGBT Center. Find a place where you can get in touch with other youth that are going through the same thing that you are, or other teens that are going through the same thing that you are. And the last thing that I would say that's more kind of practical just every day is find the spaces where you feel like truly you and truly like are your escape in a really healthy way. For me, for some people, it's like going out to the clubs and stuff. That's awesome. For some people, it's going out, dancing. I love going surfing. That's something that I've discovered since moving out here. And I find that when I'm surfing and I'm up against a huge set of waves, that wave doesn't give a fuck about my sexuality, doesn't give a fuck about the sexuality of the guy next to me or the girl next to me. And we're all just there getting in touch with the ocean and in a way looking out for one another too, because it's a little bit dangerous. And that's where I find myself at peace. And so I'd encourage anybody, whether it's music or creating, to find their thing that grounds them and know what it is, because whether you're gay or you're not, we're all going to have these ups and downs in our lives. And it's good to be prepared with something that you can use to ground yourself during some of those both high and low points.
Sam, thank you so much for the story.
Thanks for having me, David. I appreciate you giving me a microphone and a platform to speak on.
Each season of Belly of the Beast Life Stories has a different theme, a way to curate stories and make them easier for you to find the ones you'll love. In March, we're going to release Season 2, For Love of My Child. These stories are powerful, dealing with a range of issues from loss to sacrifice and even to the unimaginable. Parents have a crucial relationship with their child, no matter what. Visit inourbelly.com if you have a story that might be a good fit for this season. And be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss a single episode of this season or future seasons. Next week on Belly of the Beast Life Stories, Harsh Verma has an inspiring story to hear.
But I never thought of, you know, going back to soccer. I felt Shaolin Temple is the place that, you know, rejuvenated me completely and gave me a second life, I would say.
Growing up in Mumbai, Harsh found himself learning the craft of movie production and directing from his Bollywood family and playing professional soccer. But a knee injury that wouldn't seem to heal led Harsh to the world-famous Shaolin Temple in China. There he recovered and also spent many years training to ultimately become the world's first Indian Shaolin warrior monk. Harsh's story will be uplifting to anyone who has been depressed due to a serious injury, felt a deep spiritual calling in their life, and anyone curious about Shaolin Temple and its three areas of Zen, medicine, and Kung Fu. Harsh's story will be released on Monday, January 13th. Subscribe for free today, wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is advised by Artie Wu of PresideLife.com, sound mixing by Milos Brosetta, and produced by me, your host, David All of 1990.com. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at nrbelly and visit our website, nrbelly.com. See you next week.